The gentle music of the opening that you heard earlier is characteristic of the style that Janáček reserves for Katya throughout the opera, lyrical, tender, sweet, and poignant. But you may have noticed that there's also something else in that opening music, something ominous and insistent. Listen to the drum here, the timpani, to be specific. And here. And here again. Some people interpret this eight-note timpani motif as a symbol for fate, Katya's fate specifically, and one can certainly see it functioning that way in the opera. Others have identified it as a metaphor for the crushing, inescapable rule of the rigid bourgeois society of the day, a rule which certainly imprisons Katya. Whatever purpose Janáček had in mind for this motif, it's clearly central to his crafting of the piece. It's heard for the first time in only the fifth measure of the opera and occurs nearly 50 times before its final iteration at the end. You can draw your own conclusions about the timpani motif's meaning, but the second theme of the overture might shed some light for you. This new melody is first heard in the oboe and then repeated in the French horn, accompanied all the way by a sort of burbling flute pattern and by sleigh bells. The whole figure is evocative of a lonely journey through a desolate landscape. Did you notice the timpani motif in there? And did you catch that the opening notes of this journey theme are the very same as the timpani motif? Actually, we'll call it the departure theme for reasons that will come clear a little later. The action and the singing begins with Kudryash, our youthful intellectual, exuberantly extolling the beauty of the Volga to Glasha, a servant of the Kabanovs. He's been watching the Volga for the last 20 years, which we can safely assume is pretty close to his whole life, and he never gets tired of looking at it. Glasha couldn't care less about the Volga, but Kudryash's enthusiasm is a great bit of irony for the beginning of the opera, for it's the Volga that Katya will later use to kill herself. Before long, Decoy and his nephew Boris enter. Decoy is full of vitriolic bluster. You can hear it in the orchestra. It's his natural state through most of the opera. His abuse is aimed at Boris, whose feeble, though reasonable, attempts to defend himself drive Decoy off in a huff. With Decoy safely gone, Kudryash asks why Boris puts up with his uncle's abuse. Boris explains that it's for the sake of his sister. The two of them are in line for an inheritance, but only on the condition that Boris treats his uncle Decoy with respect. Decoy makes life miserable, and Boris feels like his youth is wasting away. Later in the conversation, he'll admit that on top of everything, he's in love from afar with a married woman, Katya Kabanova.
Анфису Михайловну, та не мнела татинка рада, про то, что си взял шлехтичу. С те причины ж
godino se snesti. Jarmom lubi čeji přimana lota pute, oby si člověk musil přilistikat. Rodiče nás v Moskvě dobře vychovali, ničeho pro nás nelitovali.
Now that you've heard some of Janáček's vocal style and how he sets the Czech text, you may have noticed that much of the lyricism and musical expression occurs in the orchestra. A lot of the vocal writing is more speech-like than melodic. That's because one of Janáček's lifelong interests was in Czech inflection. He actually used to use musical notation to write down what he called speech melody. It was his way of recording the natural ebb and flow and modulation of the Czech language. As a consequence of this study of his, the text setting in his music is famous for its remarkably naturalistic and speech-like feel. This literal style of text setting really shows its expressive advantages in the next part of the scene. Katya and her mother-in-law, Kabanicha, along with Tichon, who's Kabanicha's son and Katya's husband in that order, are returning from church. Kabanicha's foster daughter, Varvara, is also with them. Kabanicha's first words of the opera are instructions to Tichon that he must obey her and travel to the market in Kazanje, just as his father used to do. Even though he clearly doesn't want to go, he caves in immediately and assures her that he won't disobey her. Then Kabanicha shows us her true colors and goes on a tirade about how Tichon doesn't love her as much as he used to now that he's married to Katya. Tichon makes his weak objections to no avail. Then gentle Katya tries to smooth things over and reassure her that she loves her like her own mother. And of course, Tichon loves her too. Listen now to Katya. Her lines are set in true song-like melody. The orchestra plays it too. Right after that is Kabanicha's response, jagged and strident and thoroughly unmelodic and naturally speech-like. The different ways Janáček treats the two women's vocal lines sets their personalities in stark relief. By the way, you'll also hear a brief interjection by Varvara in the middle of Kabanicha's nagging. She's rolling her eyes and saying, "Here we go, another lecture." You don't have to speak Czech to know that Katya's kindness goes nowhere with Kabanicha. In fact, Kabanicha's just getting warmed up. Soon she's berating her son for never beating Katya to keep her in her place, and she even raises the possibility that Katya might take a lover, a classic bit of foreshadowing. Then she stomps off, saying that if she stays any longer, she might say something nasty, though it's hard to imagine what that might be, given all that she's said already. Tichon's response after Kabanicha is gone reveals his weakness of character. He turns to Varvara and says, "You see, Katya's always causing trouble." But Varvara defends Katya and cuts Tichon down to size by accusing him of being a drunkard. He stomps off, probably to get a drink. She closes the scene alone, reflecting on how sorry she feels for Katya and how much she cares for her. In scene two, we get some insight into Katya's personality. Katya and Varvara are alone together inside the Kabanov house, and Katya asks, Why can't people fly like birds? Birds are an important metaphor for Katya. She longs for the freedom to be able to fly away. And birds in nature were important to Janáček, too. Along with his speech melodies, he also used to use musical notation to write down bird calls and other animal sounds. He expressed his love of nature much more overtly in his next opera, The Cunning Little Vixen, but here he does compose bird calls into the orchestra right from the start of this scene. This bird music will return at a key moment later on, but here it gets more and more expansive and exalting as Katya gradually reveals her innermost feelings. She used to be so wild and free as a child, and at church she used to experience such ecstasies and visions that she could have died from happiness. Listen to her describe how she saw angels in the shafts of light streaming down from the church ceiling. This gradually builds from a very sparse texture to some of the luscious, most gorgeous music you will ever hear. She goes on to describe the dreams she used to have of flying over mountains and trees and golden cathedrals and hearing the singing of invisible choirs. That's another bit of foreshadowing, because she will hear an invisible choir once more, just before the end of the opera. But listen as she continues this fantastic description. She's getting more and more agitated, and all of a sudden she bursts out that she's being tempted by a terrible sin. It feels like she's on the edge of a cliff, and someone is pushing her over. Varvara begins to get frightened watching this breakdown, and the whole passage peaks with one of the few instances in the opera where Janáček has two voices overlap and create harmony. It's brief, but it really stands out.
Thank you.
After this, Katya's panic seems to dissipate, and in a more resigned tone, she describes her life as it is now. She keeps up appearances, but inside she's tormented by irresistible longing and sinful thoughts. And at night, she dreams of a tender voice and a lover who beckons her, and she follows him. You can see the parallels here. Because of the paralyzing conditions of her new life, the religious ecstasies of her carefree youth have faded away, and in their place, more naturalistic and adult longings for love and tenderness have taken over. Now she's drawn to them with the same fervor that drew her to the church when she was a child. Except these natural longings have no place in her life now, so they give her only the torture of guilt and the knowledge that she's poised on the brink of disaster. Varvara winkingly suggests that perhaps Katya will get a chance to actually meet this dream lover of hers, but Katya is horrified at the thought. At that moment, Tikhon enters, ready to leave on his journey. Katya throws her arms around him and begs him to either not go or to take her along, but he refuses. She all but tells him that if she's left alone, she's going to have an affair. Desperate to remain faithful, she begs him to make her swear not to speak to any stranger or look at anyone or even dare to think of anyone except for him. But she gets nowhere. He either can't or doesn't want to understand what's going on with her, and he refuses to help her. Here, Kabanika interrupts the scene, calling to Tikhon that it's time to go, and in the orchestra, we hear the sleigh bell departure theme that we first heard in the overture. Aha! That's what that theme and that timpani motif that's derived from it are all about. It's Tikhon's departure that opens the door for Katya to give in to temptation, her fate. Kabanika forces everyone to play out what to her is a proper leave-taking ritual, part of which is Tikhon making his wife promise, among other things, not to even look at another man while he's gone. This is, of course, exactly what he had just refused to do for Katya, even though she had begged him to, and it proves his utter subservience to his mother and lack of support for his wife. Here's the end of Act 1. Listen for the sleigh bell departure theme again, tinged with a couple of quiet timpani motifs that you know by heart by now. Then there's a tender, pretty theme in the upper woodwinds. This comes when Katya throws her arms around Tikhon's neck just as he's about to leave. Then Kabanika scolds her for shamelessly displaying so much affection. In another bit of really dark irony, she says, "He's not your lover, you know." Tikhon turns away, and the orchestra crescendos gradually until the curtain goes down to a thundering repeat of the fateful timpani motif. And that's the end of Act 1.